Yesterday, a United Nations official declared Syria in the throes of a full-scale civil war. The Syrian government expressed surprise and continued to blame the violence on foreign-backed terrorists. All along, most of what we know about Syria has emerged from one side or another. For the most part, journalists have not been allowed in to see for themselves. Last week, NPR's Deborah Amos crossed the border from Lebanon, and you may have heard her reports on the activities of UN monitors, on fighting in the suburbs of Damascus, and on the sense that a turning point has been reached. If you have questions about what she's seen, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And NPR foreign correspondent Deborah Amos joins us now from Damascus. And great to have you on the show, as always.
It's great to be here, Neil.
And what have you seen so far that suggests we're in a new phase in Syria?
You know, every day there's a new story here. I arrived last Thursday. By Friday, we had unusual activity in the capital. For the first time, there appeared to be coordinated attacks, not just in the suburbs, which has been part of this story for months, but in neighborhoods that were close to downtown. And it was pretty fierce fighting that went on for hours. When we went out on Saturday and talked to people in those neighborhoods, they said they couldn't sleep. They heard it all night long. The next stage of this is that the government became extremely aggressive. They had held back as the UN monitors came into the country, but Friday there was no holds barred. And what we've seen since last Saturday is the government in a full-out offensive in a number of cities, not here in Damascus, but outside against the city of Homs, against a place called Al Hafa, which apparently was resolved today. And UN monitors were prevented from moving into Al Hafa. They have been invited to go tomorrow morning. The offensive still continues in Homs. And UN sources tell us that this is the most aggressive they have seen the army since they've been here.
The UN official yesterday said some areas, some neighborhoods, some territory has been lost to insurgents.
Indeed. I talked to some diplomats and some people inside the government who said that the army has been very unhappy with the UN presence here, and they wanted to be unleashed. They felt that they lost territory to the rebels because the government pulled back because of the UN mission. They are doing what they want to do, which is to try to take back this territory. Now, the pattern has been all along that they take it back, and the rebels seize it again, and it is likely that that will be a pattern that continues. They have told the UN they need two more days in Homs to finish the rebels there. UN officials said to me today that they say to the government, but you've said that before, and the rebels come back. It is a tsunami that they are against. This rebel force grows by the week.
You were watching some of the UN monitors in action, and indeed, when they go into a neighborhood, protests spring up under the protection of their eyes.
We do see that. I was in a neighborhood called Maliha, and I tell you, those young men on the streets were emboldened as three UN monitors walked through town. The army had been there the night before. This was also a town that has rebel presence. The army came in. They smashed shops. They broke windows in the mosque. It was tanks in the streets of Damascus, which is unusual here. But these young men came out and were chanting, even though there were soldiers down the road behind sandbag positions. So we do see that. And the other thing is that the UN is very careful when they go into any area that they do have negotiations with the opposition. They are talking to the rebels. They are talking to the civilians who are running some of these towns that are held by the opposition. It is very tricky for them because the government is now accusing them of talking to terrorists. That has been the government narrative all along, that this is no civil war in Syria. What this is a terrorist uprising funded from the outside, and so their job is getting harder and harder.
You described in one of your pieces, I think on the web, a poster at the crossing point, and it sounded like a Nazi-era poster with a Jew in the background. Do people believe the Israelis are doing this? Do people believe this is foreign-backed terrorism?
If you are a government supporter, You, of course, believe that because you're told that every night on Syrian television. What's been very interesting for me to listen to is that when you interview people on the street who are pro-government, they know what to say because they've heard it on Syrian TV so often. So, for example, I went to a military hospital, and there you can see the casualties are increasing for the Syrian military. Some 15 are killed every day here in Damascus. But there were people from some of the other hotspots, and there was a young man from Daraa who had been shot while he was on his way to work. And I said, "Who shot you?" And he said, "Foreign terrorists." And I asked him, "How did he know that?" And he said, "Well, they're different from us." I said, "Do they speak Arabic with a different accent?" Well, he didn't have the answer to that one because that question hasn't been raised on Syrian television. So that was confusing for him. Their training is very good, he said. "Better than the Syrian army?" I asked. Ooh, that was confusing for him because that question has not been addressed on Syrian television. So there is an attempt to shape the narrative for those people who support the government, who are afraid of the future, who are not convinced that this opposition and this uprising is good for them. So do they believe it? Yes, they do.
It's fair to say the other side is trying to shape the narrative too.
That is true. I think what we are looking at is an opposition that is young, tech savvy, and who have really done a remarkable job of propaganda for their own side. That every time there is an attack on any village, there are thousands of videos that emerge, and it's about civilians trapped. We are running out of medical supplies. But the UN will tell you that when they get in some of these towns, they have lists, what do you need, and they find out that they don't really need very much, that they have food, they have water, they have money. And it's not just about the civilians trapped. You know, this is a fighting force here. They have joined and some say protect the peaceful protesters. But it has merged together now, this uprising, those who began, peacefully protesting and those who believe that you need guns to keep this revolution alive.
As we said, it's been difficult for journalists to get in. The BBC's Middle East Bureau editor Paul Danahar was recently in Syria. He snuck in and was traveling with the opposition. And he said it was his impression, yes, the Syrian army is being spread pretty thin, but the opposition has a lot of difficulties, too, that they're scuffling to get logistical deliveries around the country.
They are, but there is a pretty good rat line that is coming in from both Turkey and Beirut, which brings in medical supplies. And from what we can discern, weapons are arriving. It's not altogether clear to me from which border, but almost everybody here, diplomats, UN sources, everybody says that you can see that there has been an escalation in the arms that the Free Syrian Army are using on the ground. I passed a burned-out tank on the road in central Syria, and this was not just singed. This thing was destroyed, and that is not something that you cook up in the basement. That looked like a pretty sophisticated weapon. The opposition says that the rebels have taken out more than 30 tanks, but you can see that the Syrian army is also escalating what they use to come into a neighborhood. So they're responding to this weapons escalation. It used to be they didn't wear vests; now they do. It used to be that they came with APCs. Now they come with tanks. We have seen, and the UN has confirmed, attack helicopters because it is too dangerous for them to go in on the ground. So it's an escalation on both sides.
Attack helicopters. Yesterday, Secretary of State Clinton bitterly criticized the Russians for, she says, sending a new shipment of attack helicopters to the Syrians. And you say it's confirmed that they are using them against neighborhoods and cities?
They are, but these are not Russian helicopters. And if the Russians have sent them and they say that they are not, then we will see them, or the UN certainly will see them. These are old helicopters from, the Syrian Air Force, but they do use them. And that has been reported. The UN has seen them, and so that we know that they're being used.
Let's see if we can get some callers in on the conversation. Our guest, of course, Deborah Amos, NPR foreign correspondent in Damascus, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Let's start with Stephen, who's with us from Windham, Connecticut.
Hey, thanks, Talk of the Nation, for taking my call. I have to agree with you. I think there has been a significant ramp up. And I would put money down that, like, Western intelligence is running black ops, like the CIA, like MI5. I mean, 30 tanks? That's a lot of tanks. What are the possibilities that we're running black operations right now? Have you heard any rumors on the street? And if they are, will they step up their game to bring in Stinger-type missiles?
You know, I'm the kind of reporter that I need to see it before I report it, and we've seen no evidence of that so far. And Stingers, boy, we have to wait till we see them being able to shoot down a helicopter. A lot of these young men who are fighting for the Free Syrian Army, and that is a loose term. There's certainly no hierarchy. There's no general at the top that's directing. Almost every town, they're freelancers. Some of them are from the town, young men from the town that want to protect their families. In Damascus, they're from everywhere. It is not just young men from Damascus who are in the rebel force. They do have military training here. Almost everybody has to serve in the military. So they are already trained when they switch sides. So I think that that's what you're seeing. They understand military tactics, and they know that their job is to stretch the army. They've made some mistakes. They've tried to hold territory. That doesn't work for them. I'll give you an example of something that happened today. In El Hafa, which we've been reading about for the past couple of days, it's in the coastal province near Latakia. Today, the government announced that they had flushed out the rebels. Sources tell us what happened is there was a negotiated end to that one, where the rebels were allowed to leave, the ones who are still alive, and were allowed to cross the border into Turkey. And that's how that one ended up. Tomorrow, the UN monitors are invited to go into El Hafa and see the destruction there.
But you do hear rumors.
I haven't heard rumors.
Okay, that's all I, because it just seems like there's such a big change. And then you hear all these leaders from the West, like Holland and even Hillary talking about weapons down in Cameron. And I would bet money they're running black ops.
Well, we don't gamble on these things. We like to see them for ourselves.
But exactly.
Thanks very much for the call, Stephen.
Thank you.
We're talking with Deborah Amos in Damascus. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's see if we go next to Jeff. Jeff's with us from Cleveland.
Yes, I'd like some clarification on the last comment on helicopters. You said they're not Russian helicopters. That's fine. But the Syrians don't manufacture helicopters. Whose are they? Are they U.S.? Are they French? Are they British? Are they Chinese? I mean, those are the people who make attack helicopters.
Remember that this country was, for years, a protege of the old Soviet Union. The Russians have been selling Syria arms for, 30, 40 years. So when I say they're not Russian, what I mean is they're not new Russian. These are helicopters that have been in their arsenal for a long time. They're old, and they look old when you have a look at them.
Jeff, thanks.
Thank you.
All right. What have you seen that you've been to Syria many times in the past? What have you seen that surprised you?
The thing that surprises me the most, Neil, is how willing people are to say whether they are anti-government on the street. When I was here last time, people who are pro were quite willing to speak up. But now you can see debates on the street with people who are anti. And they are feeling that the tide is on their side. And that has been the most interesting. You know, there's a lot of talk about the wall of fear. And certainly that wall of fear has been broken in outside of Damascus, where people have been demonstrating for more than a year. Damascus is the capital of security for the regime. This place is really buttoned down because there's embassies here. There are government ministries here. So that was a surprise to me. And I spoke to people about it and asked if this was new. And they said, yes, it's been for the past couple of months that this idea that you could be gray, you could be in the middle, has really fallen away, that people really have chosen sides. Now, there's a lot of people who are anti-government who are not necessarily pro-opposition, but that has been the most surprising to me.
And has what started out as a Syrian opposition, a protest, has it become a Sunni civil war?
I think it depends on where you are. I had somebody say to me the other day that what we have in Syria are 500 revolutions. You will go to some cities that are calm and have nothing. You will go to some villages that protest every Friday and nobody comes and does anything about them. And you will have other places that are dead set in the middle of a civil war. They've lost family. They've moved out of their houses. They're surrounded by the army. Other neighborhoods who have a huge presence of the Free Syrian Army. And then you have Damascus. Today, life was very normal here. I was driving around the city and people were at school, at the UN hotel tonight. There is a reception because it's Russia Day. And, you know, it wasn't unusual security for 20 cars filled with diplomats who were coming into a hotel. You can go out and, you know, get your cell phone recharged. You can have lunch. It's odd because once somebody says civil war, anybody on the outside thinks, oh, my God, you know, you're in the middle of fighting, but you're not. Yeah, it just depends on where you are.
Yeah, people think Baghdad 2007.
Exactly. But it is not like that here.
Deborah, thanks very much. How did you get in, by the way?
You know, part of the UN mission here is that the Syrians must open up to journalists. And it is one of the 6 points that they have decided to adhere to. When they turn in a list, I was told by at the foreign ministry, there's 120 of us. Now, there's, you know, Chinese and Slovenes and Czechs and Poles and Russians and one American, me.
Deb Amos, the American reporter in Damascus. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, NPR's Tom Bowman just back from a month in Afghanistan, plus the off-Broadway show Old Jews Telling Jokes. That's tomorrow in this hour on Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.